Welcome to Big Boot Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I'm John Schmelk. This guy's Lance Medel, and the phone number for you is 201-939-4513. Or if you're on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Giants and Jets, the good old dress rehearsal for the regular season. The MetLife Bowl coming your way tomorrow night. You can watch the game, of course, on Channel 4. Or you can listen to the game on WCBS 880. I think that's on 880 tomorrow. I'll have to double check that.
Well, I was
going to
say, I thought it would be on the fan because the Yankees are playing the afternoon.
Then
aren't
it is on the fan.
I believe
thank
it
you.
Is on
and
the
you
fan.
Can find check it on Sports Radio 66 WFAN. Me and Lance and Jeff and Paul will be on the pregame show starting at 6:05. Kickoff, I believe, is 7:07, if I'm not mistaken. So make sure you tune in. Again, NBC and WFAN on the radio. And Lance, obviously, this is the game that people really judge as a prelude to the regular season. And I'll give my standard statement as to the preseason: the games don't count, but they matter. And I think this is how I break down this game. Last year in the preseason, we kind of pushed aside, the offense hasn't looked good. But look what they did the year before. They're going to be fine. Everything's going to be good. And then all the problems we saw in the preseason reared their head throughout the regular season all year long. And I think that's why, to me, and Paul wasn't necessarily on board with this yesterday. He was a little bit more confident. And I do think not having Beckham and Marshall there kind of reduced this a little bit. I would like to see the offense actually put together a sustained drive and go down the field and score a touchdown once in the preseason before you have to do it on national TV at Dallas against what's going to be a fired-up Cowboys team on Sunday Night Football the weekend of September 10th.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think regardless of the personnel on the field, I don't think it's asking for much to put together some type of continuity within a drive. I agree that you do have to put things in perspective and take into consideration that Beckham and Marshall and Tavares King in all likelihood are not going to be suiting up. So Eli, in all likelihood, John, is going to be throwing the football to some guys that he's barely been on the practice field with, too, because we're down to the nitty-gritty in terms of the receiving core. But this is what you alluded to, and I think it's important to note. 2015, they struggled in the preseason, and then the offense lit it up in the regular season. They had no problem putting up 30 points or so. Last year, they struggled in the preseason, and then we saw the production dip one touchdown down, meaning they averaged less than 7 points per game than they did in 15.
They went from, what, like 24 game to 18 per game, something like that?
Right around that ballpark. So the point is, you have mixed results from two preseasons in which they struggled. Right. So you can't say that, oh, well, the preseason is no indication of what's going to happen in the regular season, when we've actually had an example of struggles in the preseason carrying over to the regular season. I'm not one that subscribes to the philosophy that the preseason is definitely indicative, but I don't think you could dismiss it, I guess, is my point, that all of a sudden things are going to magically turn around come the regular season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it can, and I said this yesterday too, if the Giants don't go out there and put together a couple good drives, or even one really good drive and score a touchdown on Saturday night, that doesn't mean they're incapable of coming out on Monday night, or Sunday night rather, and putting up a 27 spot on the Cowboys. They can do it. It's possible. Sure, absolutely. But it's not a guarantee. And if you continue to see the same problems, and I think what makes me more concerned, Lance, about this preseason, to some extent, is that going out of the 2016 season, right? You heard, listen to Mike Sullivan, you listen to Ben McAdoo. The two big issues on offense that they wanted to fix was protecting the football, running the football better. And those are the two things they kind of landed on as to the two big issues that was holding this offense back. Well, what have been the two issues so far in the preseason? Turning the football over and being unable to run the football consistently. And I think that's why I understand if some fans have a level of concern that you have even this early in the preseason.
Now, with that being said, I would also throw in executing in the red zone too. Sure. May not have been the top of the list, but certainly another area that they need to work on. The positive spin to that, John, is the fact that, let's face it, most of the turnovers have taken place with Geno Smith or Josh Johnson in the game.
Correct.
So I think you at least need to look at that, because it's more important that Eli Manning and the first team protect the football.
In fairness, Eli hasn't played a whole lot either. He's only been in there
True.
For a quarter. So.
Small sample size, but I think it's at least important to note that.
That's
now,
fair.
The running game, that is a more important takeaway from the first team, because the first team, the second team, the third team, it makes no difference. There's been ups and downs in terms of the running game.
And you have Red Ellison out there. You have Evan Engram out there. You have your offensive line healthy in there. And, you know, that's one thing that I think has kind of flown under the radar here, Lance. This offensive line hasn't suffered one injury the entire preseason. I'm doing that because I don't want to jinx anything here. But it's amazing to go through a whole camp. And did we see one offensive lineman on the side working out, not with the team, during any day of practice during camp? I don't remember it. Do you?
No, they've held up. They've been durable.
It's amazing.
Same thing with the defensive line for the most part, too. Actually, both lines, I would say.
Devin Taylor missed a little bit the first week and a half of camp, but you're right. Other than that, they've been healthy.
Outside of that, everybody's been at least in the mix, especially even in the preseason games. They've been able to rotate. So that's been the positive. But on the flip side, you know your usual suspects have been in the game and the results haven't necessarily been where you want them to be.
No question about it. And defensively, I know we're going to talk a lot about the offense here, folks, and I don't mean to short shrift the defense, but the problem with the defense is that we know they're good. The guys are going to be out there. They've been good in the preseason. And frankly, it's not like this Jets offense is going to test them a whole lot. Yeah. And I think that's the difference here. You know, and coach will strangle me if you heard me say this, but this Giant defense doesn't exactly have to come out and play their A-plus game to stop the Jets from scoring in this contest. The Jets don't have many receivers. Their offensive line has been okay. We know about their quarterback situation. Whatever. Their defense is legitimately good, on the other hand. They have a very good defensive front. Yeah. Their secondary is young. We're not sure exactly what they are quite yet. But you get back to the running game, Lance. This offensive line, the running game, the receivers, the tight ends, all those people together in a package with blocking and running. This is a real legitimate challenge here for them to try to turn things around in the preseason.
Yeah, Sheldon Richardson, Muhammad Wilkerson, they've got some
Leonard Williams
in the front seven. Can't overlook that. I would agree with you. I think it's a much more difficult task at hand for the Giants offense than what the defense is going to be presented with. But you still want to see chemistry and continuity on the defensive side, too. You know, clearly this was the first game, this last one against the Browns, where we saw JPP and Vernon out there at the same time. And I think that, you know, even those two players may have taken a step forward in terms of complementing one another.
They look pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Now Joe Thomas wasn't on the field, but
but still,
good.
With that being said, yes. I mean, once again, you got to take that for what it's worth. And B.J. Goodson, I think, has shown a great deal of progress game in and game out. And the secondary has held its own, at least the cornerback position. So those are all positives. You want to see that continue. But, yes, on offense, you want to see some type of statement in the trenches. And nobody's saying that they got to run for 100 yards, but you just want to see if Perkins can get a 3-yard run, followed by a 4-yard run, followed by a 3-yard run. You know, you'd like to see a stretch like that even.
Yeah, no one's asking for 5.5 yards per carry, but if they can be in a third and 4 instead of a second and 11, you know, don't gain 1 yard. Don't gain no yards. Don't go backwards.
Yeah.
You know, gain 3. If you gain 3, you know what? That's cool. You know, you put yourself in a 2nd and 7, a 3rd and 4. In 2nd and 7, you can almost run any play you want.
You got options.
Exactly. If you're in 2nd and 11, it's a different story. You know, 3rd and 8 versus 3rd and 4 is a big difference. So you want to try to get at least something going on the ground against this Jet defense. And frankly, then you also want to show, and I think this has been better than people have given them credit for. I think you want to see the pass protection continue to be strong as well, which I think has been better than people have kind of made it out to be. But you would like to see, obviously, you try to block those very talented Jet defensive linemen and keep them off Eli Manning, obviously.
Yeah, Eli Manning was sacked once early in the game against the Cleveland Browns. The other sacks, obviously, have come with Josh Johnson and Geno Smith. Now, the starters were in the game. I'm not trying to make excuses here, but I think you also need to look at the fact that sometimes the quarterback has run into the sack and hasn't necessarily helped the case of the offensive line. Here's another thing, though, to keep close tabs on in this game. The penalties haven't been overwhelming on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is something that can't just be dismissed because, you know, what was a prominent issue, especially for Eric Flowers last season?
Now, I'll be honest, though. I feel like they did miss a couple on him against Myles Garrett in that last game.
I would say that that's fair. I think there was a lot of activity above the net.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that. But you know what? Listen, if they don't call it, they don't call
it. That's absolutely
true. And that happens in football.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that as an offensive lineman, you shouldn't have an opportunity to look at the film and take a step back and realize, hey, right, I need to make some adjustments. But the facts are there haven't been an overwhelming amount of penalties,
sure,
and that was something that I thought really hurt the Giants last season.
What's your take on Brett Jones getting some first-team reps over at right guard over the last couple of days of practice?
I think it's pretty much them just toying and experimenting, which is something they've done. I don't know
if there's
really
see it in the game?
Much to read into. I think it's possible. I also think it's possible that DJ Fluker perhaps gets thrown in with the first team.
I've been surprised.
Which I personally would like to see.
Me too. And it's funny. I was surprised that of the guys that they put in there with the first team, that it was Jones. Because if you're trying to generate a more consistent running game, and that's your goal, you would think Fluker, being 60 pounds heavier than Brett Jones would be the more logical guy to slide in there to get push in the run game, but they like what they have in Jones in terms of his knowledge, his smarts, his mobility, while Fluker is more of obviously just a gigantic human being. That's going to maul you.
Remember, Jones did fill in a little bit for Justin Pugh last season, mm-hmm. so this is not something that we haven't seen before, but they look at Fluker as a right-side offensive lineman because, let's face it, we really haven't seen him much on the left side. I know he did get some reps early in camp, but now they've been experimenting with Brett Jones more so on the left side before they turn to Fluker. So, if anything, the question is Fluker going to have some reps in place of John Jerry with the first team against the Jets?
Yeah, and right now, look, it looks like Pugh and Flowers are going to be your two left-side guys. And the question is John Jerry going to hold on to that right guard spot? We haven't really seen anybody take first-team reps for Bobby Hart at right tackle, so there's no reason to think he's going to lose that job. And he's actually, I think, played fairly well and has shown improvement over the course of camp in the preseason. But is it going to be Jerry? Is it going to be Brett Jones? Is it going to be Fluker? If I had to place a wager now, I'd probably say I believe it'll still be John Jerry, in my opinion. But we'll have to wait and see.
They have options, which is good. But I would lean towards your line of thinking, which is that if they don't feel there's a reason to take John Jerry out of the lineup, and fans would disagree, and that's fine. And I'm not saying that there's not. I just think that
except for one favorite fan on Twitter, he wants to.
Well, he wants to take everybody out of the lineup, so he's in the opposite end of the spectrum.
Well, I was more referring to the one man John Jerry fan club that you always tend to feud with online.
I got you. Yes. Okay. I thought you were referring to the other.
Yeah.
Oh. The other people. That
Charlie,
we
I will
to
name
by name.
That's fine.
Yes, but I would lean towards your thinking, which is that I think right now John Jerry is penciled in week one as the starter at right guard.
All right, we got a few other things to talk about, but we got four people on the line. The lines are jammed up, so you might as well get to your calls, and we'll start with Ricky out in Portland, Oregon. I wonder if he's on the Nike campus. What's going on, Ricky? How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for asking, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Big fan of the show. I love you guys.
Thanks for waking up early with us, Ricky.
Yes, sir. So, listen, I actually kind of want to talk about some of the things that you were discussing this morning, the offensive observation, trying to establish a rhythm. I kind of look at it this way. McAdoo, if you wanted to get a sense of kind of how he approaches things, just, watch him in a press conference. He gives nothing up.
Correct.
I get the sense that, the preseason, offensive game plans, very vanilla. They're not doing a lot of the things that they're kind of going to plan on doing during the regular season.
Ricky, I want to pause you for a second there. The Giants are running their offense. I mean, they're practicing. Now, you're not going to see maybe some of the trick stuff or some of the new stuff, but the core part of their offense and their system and the plays that are going to be a main part of their game plan during the regular season, they're using those in the preseason. I mean, the offense is the offense. People have seen the Giants run Ben McAdoo's offense for 3 years. There really aren't many surprises anymore. There's a few new plays here or there, and you're right, they're going to save those and whip those out in Dallas in week one. But your basic, core of this offense and the plays they're going to run the most, they're running them in the preseason.
Fair. So I think what I'm kind of, looking at is where the Giants, I feel, have a strength when they're getting going and running consistently on the positive is when they run more of a four-minute offensive style where it's a little bit more of a muddled huddle. They don't really do, the uptown fast-paced offense, but get Eli up to the line early, let him do his pre-play planning and reading of the defense.
Sure.
When they go that way, I feel like they get the defense on their heels. They can establish a little bit more of a consistent run game because they can mix it up, with the tempo. So that's where I'm looking forward to seeing them, because from a personnel standpoint, I feel like they're better suited this year than they have been in years prior with McAdoo, with the two tight ends, being able to mix in Shepard or Roger Lewis in there and kind of keep players fresh on the offense by rotating small, one or two players from each play. So I'm really looking forward to seeing, what they can do there. That's kind of the hope I'm having going into the regular season. The second thing I wanted to talk about is with the free agent signing period after, the final cutdown.
Yeah.
So obviously there's going to be a plethora of players made available at the end. I'm hoping and I'm sure that the Giants are doing the due diligence. I mean, we have a good sense of who's going to be you know, on the team and more or less, you know, who the guys were going to be able to, let go. And I would imagine we can look at the teams and their situations and kind of anticipate, you know, more or less what we're going to see available. Do you feel like we're going to take a best player available approach or, you know, a need basis style when we look at that free agent signing period?
To me, that's a need thing. You know, your positions of weakness, and Ben McAdoo actually mentioned this at his press conference the other day, that a lot of teams around the league have almost stockpiled certain positions. There's no way that all those players on those teams are going to make the final 53, so there could be, especially without that early cut down now, you're going to have a handful of, you know, players good enough to make the team that are going to be made available when the final cutdowns happen Labor Day weekend. So I think, in my opinion at least, Lance, I think you go after a need. Like, there's no reason for the Giants to go out there and, you know, add a safety. You know, they have three safeties that they think can start. But if there's an offensive lineman they think they like, maybe a backup defensive back that can be their, you know, fourth or fifth defensive back on the roster. If these receiver injuries are more serious than we know, maybe look for a receiver. But I think you definitely prioritize need when you get to that waiver period on Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, you're looking to bolster the back end of your depth chart.
Thanks, Ricky.
Appreciate the call, Ricky. That's the number one priority. But I think that if somebody unexpectedly gets released and you feel that they can upgrade whatever you have, even perhaps somebody who starts, you know, I don't think that you're at least going to deny yourself the opportunity from exploring that. But, you know, remember, the teams that are in dire need and also had a higher draft selection are going to get bigger priority, because remember, we still go by the draft order until we get a few weeks into the regular season in terms of waiver claim order is what I'm referring to.
Absolutely. And by the way, for you folks on the West Coast, and we're about to go to somebody in California next, this is the final show that's going to be on at 10 o'clock. So the show returns to noon next week, so that's good for the West Coasters. You don't have to be up at the crack of dawn to tune into the show. We'll be back at noon starting next week, and we'll start going through our the week after. We'll start going through our regular season rotation of hosts. We'll have a couple new voices. Most of the usuals will remain, or all the usuals will remain. And, again, starting noon next week, we're back. Usual time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Bruce in California, he's up early. How are you, Bruce?
Very well. Good morning, guys.
Hey, Bruce.
Good morning, Bruce.
Hey, I wanted to let you know my family's been season ticket holders since the Polo Grounds in 1954, and definitely am committed to the Giants in a major way. So, a lot of love there. I appreciate the observations you guys make. It's real interesting to listen to out in California. So I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening, Bruce.
Hey, the question I had, involved the comment I wanted to make, and maybe get your guys' thoughts and opinions on it. You know, one of the things over the years and even recently that I think I've found quite frustrating in watching the Giants' offense is, you know, I find that they're an extremely predictable offense. And I think that a key success factor in the NFL, it has to be the ability to be unpredictable and having a defense particularly not know what you're likely to do. And, I mean, there's times when predictability will be successful if you have a massive offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield. I mean, there's times when you can just overpower it, but for the most part, having that unpredictability is very important. And I think there's sort of, you know, there's three areas. I'll give you examples that I find infuriating in watching the Giants, right? First is in, you know, short and goal, right? I mean, how many times have we watched short and goal, three runs between the tackles, kicking the field goal? I mean, it doesn't seem like we're exercising an awful lot of creativity in trying to get the ball in.
Well, Bruce, in fairness on that one real quick, I think the Giants stole a decent amount of those fade routes, too, to the corner of the end zone. So it's not like they're running the ball over time. They do utilize the passing game down there. In fact, I would argue one of the reasons that they've struggled down there is because they're not able to run it in, and they have to rely on the passing game too much.
Yeah, I guess I watch the games, but I'm sure defensive coordinators spend a lot more time studying them. And
of course,
it just doesn't seem there's very much variation in what they're trying. It's not that they don't do an occasional fade, but it's sort of like a very limited selection of options that they use to get the ball in from inside the five. I mean, and just we watch it a lot. another example is, third and long, right? Now, obviously, you can say, well, unpredictable is the draw play third and long. But I've watched them do the draw play third and long for so many times that it becomes an expected play on third and long. So another kind of example of something that I say, guys, you got to find something, a little more unpredictable to do. And then the last thing, which, again, just is another example, is, I think the last time the Giants faked a punt, I was dramatically younger than I am now. I understand that it's not easy to fake a punt, but, we don't ever seem to try to do those things.
And well, Bruce, let me say this.
When you have a great defense like we do, you can, in midfield, you can try on a 4th-and-2. You should be able to have a play that might get you a first down, and if it doesn't, you've got a great defense to hold the opponent.
So, Bruce, honestly,
those are kind of the examples I'd offer, but generally, I think creativity is important, and sometimes I just don't see enough of it, and I'm wondering what you guys think of that.
Well, Bruce, I want to ask you one question quick. Did you think the Giants were also predictable under Kevin Gilbride?
I've pretty much, and again, it may just be that we tend to focus on the things that we see and get frustrated with over many years, but sure, I haven't seen the Giants try too many different, interesting, out-of-the-box thinking. I hear that it has to do with sort of personnel. But I look at on the defense, for example, one of Spag's, talents is, I think the offense that we play against, they don't even know what's coming a lot of the times. And it's that fact that he's so unpredictable, it's a little higher risk, but when it works and it has consistently, you end up with a strong performance. And so I guess I'd use that as an example.
Well, I think, though, the one thing that you have to take into consideration when you compare the defensive personnel and the offensive personnel is, Spags has a tendency to mix and match, and you do that also to preserve your defensive personnel throughout the course of a game. People have criticized the Giants for using 3 wide receivers too much, but let's face it, if you're Ben McAdoo, are you going to take Odell Beckham off the field? Are you going to take Brandon Marshall off the field? Are you going to take Sterling Shepard off the field so that you get more reps for Roger Lewis, let's say? You have to look at it from that perspective, meaning why sacrifice guys that are clearly going to draw more attention? It's the same thing with depending on who plays more with Evan Engram and Rhett Ellison. If Evan Engram becomes more of a threat, I don't think they're going to want to take him off the field just so that they could give different looks, especially if Engram is a guy that nobody's been able to slow down. So a lot of that, I think, is going to be dependent on how the season plays out. Your point about the fake punt, they've also used and viewed Brad Wing as a weapon, remember, and they've said that since they've acquired him. So they figure, why get creative when we know that he could place the ball in a spot that we want? And also, why put pressure on your defense? You mentioned, well, if they take the risk on 4th-and-2, they give the opposition back the ball at midfield. But you know what happens, Bruce, with that philosophy is, if your offense is not scoring as much, and we have yet to see, then you're putting so much pressure on your defense, eventually they're going to break, and eventually you're going to have that game where you give up 25 points and your offense can only score 20, and then you're going to say, well, was the risk really worth taking?
Yeah, and Lance, I agree with you, and your first point, to me it's almost an argument. I'm not suggesting you necessarily need to play with a different group of wide receivers, but just use them in a slightly different way. Try different types of misdirection. That's I'm not speaking so much about bringing in, Roger Lewis instead of Odell Beckham. I'm talking about using Odell Beckham in a slightly different way. And in the case of the fake punt, I'm not talking about trying it, 7 times a season, but it's been 7 seasons since they tried it. I'm just thinking having that uncertainty helps your special teams and punt game if they're not sure that you're going to punt the ball. So I just it's that argument I was trying to make.
All right, Bruce. Bruce, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it.
And that's a fair point. But, I think a lot of it also depends on the special teams personnel. I'm watching special teams during the preseason, and, even Ben McAdoo has mentioned this. It's been a lot of mixed results in terms of the punt return, the punt coverage. I think they're at the point where, they don't know exactly who's going to be on special teams yet. And the rationale being because they don't know who's going to win those back-end roster jobs. So whenever you try to get creative on special teams, it's not so much having confidence in Brad Wing, the punter, and the snapper. It's also having confidence that everybody else around that position is in the right spot and you have the confidence that they can execute. And I think until they get to that stage, I don't know if they would necessarily have the urge to experiment. Maybe get to midseason where everybody's a little bit more comfortable with their roles. I could see that happening. But, you know, this is a very young special teams unit. That's the point I'm making. You're going to have a lot of rookies and second-year players ultimately on this year's team. And that means that are you confident that perhaps what a polished veteran could execute evenly is something that a younger guy can do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you take a look at the team, you take that into consideration. But I also do think, you know, we all know Tom Coughlin was not a fan of trick plays, right? That was not his thing. He didn't like doing it. I was surprised. I thought we might see a trick play out of Ben McAdoo last year on a fake special teams play or something like that. We didn't. I would not put it out of the realm of possibility in 2017. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. Matt's in Florida. He's up next. Hi, Matt.
Hey, what's up, fellas? How's it going?
Doing all right, Matt. What do you got for us?
I got two questions for you guys, but real quick. The transcripts that you guys used to have online where we could read the interviews and stuff, because sometimes you can't hear them. Are those still on the website somewhere? I haven't been able to find them.
That's a really good question.
Question.
As far as I know, the answer is yes, but I will investigate that currently for you.
All right, cool. So two quick questions, both on the offensive line, which seems to be the hot topic.
Hey, by the way, I already found it. To roll on real quick, Maggie, go to the news section, which is the first tab if you're on a computer, and that drop-down menu, you will have a tab that says transcripts.
Oh, okay. It may not be on the app is what I was looking at, but it may just be on the website on the computer, but I'll check it out.
Okay, perfect.
All right, cool. So offensive line. You guys, I don't know if it was Paul in the past or somebody had said that our offensive line is a bit undersized compared to some other offensive lines in the NFL, but they have really good technique, supposedly, and therefore that, you know, can overrule some of the size issues. But at this point, I mean, I hear the guys, Pugh and Richburg, you know, every day when they get interviewed saying, yeah, we're improving every day. But I still kind of see the same thing. They're getting pushed back by a lot of defensive lines. And I think at this point, however many years they've been together, it kind of is what it is. I don't think we're going to consistently, with this offensive line, be able to get a lot of push and create big holes for our running backs to get through. Would you guys say that's kind of the case?
Well, I think when you look at the fact that these guys have been on the field for quite some time, you know, to think that things are going to drastically change, I don't think it's a stretch what you're saying there, Matt. You know, you do hope that perhaps the more and more they're on the field together, that perhaps the unit overall, I think, can play stronger. But the individuals, you know, taking their games to whole other levels, I don't know necessarily if that's going to happen. Remember, Justin Pugh missed a lot of time last year. You know, people tend to forget about that. Everybody talks about how, well, you know, this offensive line has been on the field and that the continuity should be there. But, you know, Pugh missed, what, 6 games or so last season. So, you know, they had to move guys into left guard. They moved and mixed and matched personnel. So they didn't really have a full season last year together, especially for a guy like Ereck Flowers playing next to the same left guard. So I know we've brought this up before. You know, the first year was Flowers not being fully healthy. Now you have Flowers not necessarily playing next to the left guard, and there's a point where, listen, it is what it is. I'm not bringing it up to give more of an excuse as to, okay, well, we need to buy more time for the offensive line, but I still think there's potential that this unit improves because they're always on the field together, as opposed to maybe the one-on-one individual work being elevated. I'm not necessarily sure if that's going to drastically happen.
Okay, that makes sense. My second question, then, and I'll take it off the air, is so Ereck Flowers, third year, he's, you know, you guys have said he's taken some small steps in improvement, nothing drastic. Small steps are good. But I'm wondering, you know, you guys have said throughout the course of preseason, all right, we can't really tell anything until they get the pads on. And then after that, all right, they got the pads on. Can you guys really tell anything yet? Not too much.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you can see a little bit. I think you would have probably, you know, liked to see, you know, more consistent progress in practice. I don't think that's something that's a stretch to argue. And I think in the game situations, he's been pretty good. He hasn't really allowed a pressure yet, which I think is very positive.
Or penalties,
correct. Again, yeah. I think he got away with a couple last week, but they didn't call him. And as Lance said before, that's really all that matters. And I think this week against the Jets will be another really good test against a good defensive line. But
so my question to you guys then, because you guys get to see these guys a little more close up than we do. And you guys watching him in either in practice or in the games, you know, his technique, which is what we keep hearing is the issue with him. You know, his workouts in the off season have supposedly, you know, given him a little better chance of getting better in his technique. But at this point in his career, is his technique kind of what it is? Can we really expect that to improve immensely, or is it that just going to be something kind of baby steps? He may get a little better at it, but he kind of is what he is at this point.
That's a good question, and frankly, Matt, if I had the answer, I think I'd probably have a much better job than I do right now. And I think I think it depends player to player. I think some players are able, for whatever reason, transfer teaching better to what they do on the field. I mean, it's obviously not a universal thing, because if it was a universal thing, every coach tries to drill technique into their guys. Every offensive lineman in the NFL would have perfect technique. So it obviously doesn't just transfer like that. Otherwise, everybody would be perfect at it. I think it depends player to player. Why hasn't it clicked with Eric quicker? I don't have the answer to that. They're teaching him. Might it click in a year? Since it hasn't clicked now, I guess it's possible. But I think the longer you go without seeing that big jump, the less likely it is of happening later. But a precise answer, I don't think I can give it to you, to be honest with you.
All right. Cool, guys. Well, hey, I appreciate it. You guys do an awesome job. Let's go Giants.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, Matt. Thanks for the phone call.
Dave in Cranford, you're up next. What's up, Dave?
Try
Dave one
words.
More time. Dave is gone. Okay.
All right. Dave is not as talkative as normally he is.
Dave, call back. We'll get you right up. Don't worry about it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
This is the guy where the dial tone should have came into play.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Charlie in Portland, Maine, who has been tweeting up a storm this morning. How are you, Charlie?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. Hey, there is another. There is hope. There is number 65 in the hood. He's back with
He's
greater
fairy
power
tales.
Than ever before. Mr. Will Beatty working out for the Jets. JR, bring him in. He's right next door. Bring him in. He's had a whole year to work out. Last year he couldn't work out because of his shoulder surgery. That's why we didn't sign him until he didn't even start working out until July. And then we signed him, what, end of August, 1st of September? I can't remember. But he's had a whole year. And I'm telling you, we've got to fix this O-line, and it's not going to be with the same personnel we got right now. So I'm hoping we got to see there's a problem first. And McAdoo's starting to see it. Just even saying that he would actually might change the O-line, you know, and put in other players is like, to me, is like, oh, my God, my mouth dropped to the floor.
You know, Charlie, that's my question. You finally got a change on the offensive line. I figured you'd be all about Brett Jones today, and you're calling about a guy that's not even on the damn roster.
Well, because
he's
focused more on left tackle than anything else.
He should be on the roster. And the thing is, you got Nick Mangold sitting out there. You get Brandon Albert sitting out there. Bring these guys in.
Charlie, I'm going
to
tell you a story about
– see what they got.
Charlie, I'm going to tell you a story about Will Beatty. The Giants watched Will Beatty all year last year, okay?
Yeah.
He was around.
He was here.
They saw him. Charlie, they saw what he was. They saw him here. And trust me, I'm sure they've kept track of him during the off season. And let me tell you something. I have been sitting at the train station, and I saw back in the fall – or rather back in the winter – the big train with a number 65 on it, and you know what? That train has left the station, and I don't think the train's coming back. I don't think the train's going to get put in reverse and back up into the station. Now, maybe I'll be wrong, but in my opinion, Will Beatty has pulled out, and he ain't coming back in, all right?
There's a reason why they're doing repairs on Penn Station,
Giants,
okay? There's trade issues.
But I tell you, he'll be playing for some team. Jacksonville needs somebody right now.
And
Cam Robinson got toasted.
So so did Laramie Tunzel, by the way, in the Dolphins game yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many
left tackles. Charlie, wait a minute. Are you admitting that there's other teams that have left tackle trouble? Charlie, don't go there, Charlie.
Left tackle trouble because they didn't want to pay Albert. That's why they got left tackle trouble. You can't bring in a rookie like we did.
Well, what about the Dolphins, though? What's the explanation for the Dolphins?
That guy's proven that he can play. He probably had a bad game.
All right. So that's okay.
But hold on. By the way, if Albert was so good with all these teams having left tackle problems, how come he hasn't signed anywhere yet?
You guys keep saying that. He will sign somewhere. He will. He'll play. And I bet I'll make a bet
Charlie,
that Petey is going to be playing for a team this year.
Charlie,
I
would not be surprised if Brandon Albert signed somewhere. But
if
he was as good as you're making him out to be, don't you think a team – oh, by the way, did you notice the Seahawks starting left tackle is lost for the year with the torn ACL? They just traded for Matt Tobin,
who can't play left tackle.
Yeah. They're trying to figure it out. Their offensive lineman the last 3 years, quite frankly, the Seahawks, it stunk. It's worse than the Giants. The only reason they're able to function is because Russell Wilson can scramble and run and survive back there. They're in so desperate need for a left tackle. If Brandon Albert and Will Beattie are so damn good, how come they're not with Seattle – even working out for the Patriots to be their left tackle this year? Answer me that question. I'd love to know the answer.
The Seahawks, I think you meant.
What
I said.
Why,
Patriots.
Sorry, Seahawks.
Dumb. That's why they're dumb, just like the Giants GM is dumb.
Oh, yeah. The Seahawks are dumb. Charlie, hold on.
They're stupid.
Charlie, hold on. The Seahawks are so dumb, they've won Super Bowls, and they've made the playoffs more consecutive years than any other team in the NFC.
And keep getting to
the
playoffs,
how dumb they are.
Yeah.
They've been the most consistent team in the whole damn conference for half a decade, and they're stupid.
Look, if they keep playing
rationale
with the offensive line, they aren't going nowhere.
Brandon Albert's not good. You don't think Tom Coughlin wants a good left tackle on his team? If he was that good, he would have welcomed him back to the team.
Hey, Petey might be in Jacksonville. Don't count that out yet. Don't count him not being there.
Charlie, I'm not denying the fact that it's possible that some of these guys may be picked up and maybe some of these teams are waiting so they don't have to guarantee the full contract. Listen, anything's possible.
Exactly.
But
that's true, too.
But you know what? Even if they're waiting to do that, even if Brandon Albert and Will Beattie get opportunities, if you think they're going to walk in week one and then all of a sudden everything's going to be great at the left tackle spot, just like that, when they haven't even taken practice reps with their new teammates, I mean, I think you got another thing coming.
And by the way, there are teams,
remember,
Charlie.
He was here last year. He knows the offense.
Charlie,
he was
remember.
There last year. He was in practice every day.
There are teams that have the luxury of being able to wait so they don't have to guarantee a contract. Of that, there's absolutely no question. I'm not going to argue that. But there are certain teams that are, frankly, I will use the word, desperate enough to have a good left tackle that they don't have that luxury to wait until September to make that move.
We don't have that luxury either. Our offensive line is horrible.
Charlie, I hate to tell you, Charlie, the Giants situation at left tackle is much better than the Seahawks, and it's much better than the Jaguars, and it's not close.
Well, that's not saying a whole lot.
And it's not close.
Our O-line,
it's not close.
What are we going to do?
And it's better than the Jets, by the way, too.
This week? Are we going to be able to run 50 yards again this week? Is Brad Wynn going to be punting like 15 times? It was so nice to see a game last night where two teams actually scored and a team actually could run out the clock running the ball in the last 3 minutes
of
the game.
I'm not arguing the offensive line has played well. I'm not sitting here telling you everything's okay. I'm just telling you, Beattie's not the answer. Those are two different conversations.
If you don't bring people in, then you're just not going to have any answer. You've got to start bringing people in. That's my gripe. If they come in and they're actually worse,
Charlie,
the
they know.
Have,
Charlie,
doubt,
Will Beattie played his whole career with the Giants. Nobody in the NFL knows more about Will Beattie than the New York Football Giants. Nobody. They know what he is, and they have determined he is not better than what they have on the roster.
And that's
what else you want me to tell you.
Charlie, that's
the
biggest question.
There isn't too many guys out there that aren't better than what's on our roster.
No, there are plenty.
Our
in fact, I just named whole teams.
Terrible.
Well, but Charlie, that's your mindset, though. That doesn't mean that the front office and the coaching staff shares your sentiment.
That's the problem.
Well, that's your problem.
That's
but you can't, just because, Charlie, I think you
that's,
got... you've got a fascination with names. I think that's what you're – listen, no, remember, you campaigned for Jake Long last year. And,
I'm just trying to get people in here.
Well, yeah, but here's
we
the point.
We can't have the
Charlie,
same five
Charlie,
people doing the same thing we did last year.
Charlie,
it's insanity.
I agree with you that it never hurts if a team brings in personnel to work them out because they should always do their due diligence in keeping up with people.
Absolutely.
But as John, but as John pointed out, Will Beattie, of all players to name, is the one guy that I think this organization has an immense amount of knowledge on, considering they drafted him and they saw him as early and as late as last year. You know, it's one thing to make a case for Brandon Albert, Charlie. I think he got a lot more substance there.
Absolutely.
If you want to make that case, because he has no ties to the Giants.
Absolutely.
But to keep throwing out Will Beattie, you're talking about a guy that this organization knows about. If they felt that Will Beattie could upgrade what they currently have, he probably would have been in the door and he would have been in camp by now. So, I mean, I think you got to look at it through that lens.
Well, the thing with Will Beattie is, like I said, he had shoulder surgery last year. He wasn't even able to work out till July.
Well, but let me throw this out to you, though, Charlie. You're using that.
He had a whole year to work out now.
Okay, so you're using that as an example slash an excuse that Beattie deserves another shot because, in your opinion, he wasn't fully healthy. Though people are not willing, though, to give the same credence to Eric Flowers in 2015 when he played the entire season with an ankle injury. I'm just saying if you're gonna use we didn't truly
year,
see his
he
potential.
He was one of the worst tackles in the NFL. He hasn't gotten better.
He did play last year, but the point is, last year though was his second year in the league. Will Beattie's been in the league a lot longer than Eric Flowers.
Flowers improve on is a chokehold. He's got that down really well. He's got a good chokehold now. He chokeholded OV in practice the other day. And he chokeholded about three times in the game that he just played.
Listen, Charlie, nobody is disagreeing that Eric Flowers is not still in a position where he's done trying to improve or he's done trying to tweak his technique. I don't disagree with the fact that he's reached his ceiling and that this is it and that these things, you know, are never going to happen again. He's still obviously in a position where he needs to make improvements. There's no doubt about that. But that doesn't mean that Will Beattie has more upside than Eric Flowers, in fairness.
All I'm saying is bring people in and find out. Well, we bring in couch chips. We bring in guys like, you know, haven't even played in the NFL. And we go, oh, good, now we got another offensive lineman. It's like bring in some people who have actually played and played well. Then if they're lousy, fine. Then I'd say fine. But we don't even bring them in.
Well,
that's the issue.
Well, you know what? I think it may be a reflection on
your eye
for the offensive line, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. You know, just because they're not bringing in your guys doesn't mean that they're not necessarily exploring their options. And we went over, John, we've gone over the free agent market. I mean, I understand Charlie may be in a very rare group of people that actually thinks that there's an overwhelming amount of talent still out on the market. But if you look at the left tackles out there, specifically guys that could just play left tackle, there is not a lot of substance out there on the free agent market. And the reason being is because if there was anybody of quality that could very well upgrade any offensive line, they would have been signed by now. You know, Brandon Albert is the one name that you could throw out there. But remember, I mean, this was a guy a few weeks ago that was talking about retirement, and then all of a sudden he had a 180 where he decided that he wanted to get back in the mix, and the Jaguars at that point already handed things over to Cam Robinson and wanted to go in a younger direction. So the fact that he still is out there, I think, says a lot about perhaps how the NFL views Brandon Albert and whether or not they think he's durable, number one, because he's dealt with his fair share of injuries over his career, or other teams feel, you know what, we'd rather groom a younger guy than just take a flyer on a veteran like that.
Hey, look, and I get the argument with Brandon Albert. I get that.
Yeah, but the logic is there. I'm not going to disagree with it.
And that's fine. The Giants obviously think otherwise based on where they are right now, but at least I get where Charlie's coming from that. I understand it. The Will Beattie thing, I can't.
Well,
I have to understand and trust that the Giants know enough about Will Beattie to know that that's not the answer.
It's his fascination with Will Beattie. That's the simple part of the answer. Charlie gets tied to certain players within the organization, and that's great. Will Beattie is his guy, so he's going to do everything he can to make sure that he gets on his team.
And by the way, Brandon Albert did just, like, retire and then decided to come back two days later. I mean,
you have to consider that. You know, you got to think about the mindset. First of all, do we know that Brandon Albert definitely wants to play? I understand he tried to make an effort to come back to Jacksonville. However, a big part of the report, John, was the fact that he then realized, oh, you know what? I may have to give back part of my signing bonus. So it actually may pay to come out of retirement so I can make sure that the money comes. Do we know that Brandon Albert actually wants to continue to play his career? Or maybe he was motivated by just making sure he didn't have to hand over the majority of his signing bonus back to Miami, the team that traded him to Jacksonville. Do we know that, Charlie? I'm being honest here. I'm not trying to be funny.
I don't.
Do we know that?
I don't.
We haven't heard anything. You know, I'm not trying to get off topic here, but it's the same thing with the whole Colin Kaepernick debate. Until you hear from the player himself, everything else is just a pure game of speculation. You have to hear from the player to know what the mindset of the player is.
All right, Dave and Cranford is back with us on line three. Dave, what's going on, man? How are you? Thanks for calling back.
Oh, no worries, guys. It's a, you know, again, just to take a step back for a quick second, this show is a godsend, and it's you guys do an awesome job, and you really, and the crazy part is I'm calling in from, you know, New Jersey. I feel like the outsider. My gosh, it's like you guys get phone calls from, like, you know, all over the country.
Well, Dave, here's the thing. You know what? There's people in New Jersey and New York, and this is how I think of it at least. You know, they have WFAN. They have, you know, ESPN Radio. They have all the local papers. They have all these local outlets to get their Giants coverage. But you're living out in, you know, Los Angeles or Portland or overseas with the military or whatever. You don't get that same access to local talk about the team that you root for. And I think what we like doing most is serving the Giant fans that don't get that service because they don't live in the tri-state area. So it's great.
I agree. I agree with you, John. I would just say that this is a step up in coverage even for those of us that have access to those local things.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah.
Point.
Thank you.
Just a couple things. One, I just want to make a comment about the Jet game. One of my concerns about going into this Jet game is that you might be able to make the argument that this is the Jets' biggest game of the year and will be their most meaningful game for them as they look at it. And I think from an effort standpoint, that concerns me a little bit.
Dave, you know what? Dave, you're absolutely right. Let me just jump in real quick, and then I'll let you finish. I think the Jets are going to come out with, like their hair's on fire in this game because they've been hearing about how bad they're going to be for a month or 6 months and how good the Giants are going to be. And frankly, they're going to get annoyed. If you don't think Todd Bowles is going to use that as motivation to get his team going for this game, you're crazy. Now, you hope that they don't take it too far and there's no extracurricular stuff, but I really think the Jets are going to come out here and give the Giants everything they got.
I totally agree. I think, John, I think I would just disagree with you on one thing you said earlier. Not dramatic, but I would just – the thing that I want to see on the offensive line is – I really want to see more that they don't have these physical losses at the point of attack, particularly, ironically, at the point of attack amongst the interior of the line.
I agree with you. I'm with you on
that. I think because when we don't have negative plays and negative runs, even if they're, the offense is much more productive. But I do think as it relates to that, so that's one thing I'm definitely looking for in the Jet game. I'd like to see them hold up physically at the point of attack. I'm not as concerned about the production and the scheme because I really believe that if you listen to McAdoo, he said that this year they spent more time in the offseason with coaches going back and forth and really evaluating their scheme. And I really believe that you're going to see the Giants be much more multiple this year, but I don't think they want to show that now. If you look at the second, we've talked about this before, the second Dallas game, you know, Sean Lee ate our lunch because they basically knew the plays before we were running them.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think when they looked at that, I think they said, hey, you know what? And that was the bringing in of Red Ellison. That's the development that you see in Evan Engram. And I think the tight ends and their role can't be underestimated in the lack of the running game.
I agree.
And I think you're going to see, you know, so it's a little bit of optimism, but I'm not as concerned in the preseason because I really believe that whether we're going to see these run plays, I just don't know. I don't know that these are going to be the core run plays. Now, the physical side of getting beat up, I mean, they've got to stop that.
Dave, I agree. I think Lance and I are on the same page, to be honest with you.
Red Ellison had a key block on that Paul Perkins 16-yard run against the Cleveland Browns. That was by far the best run if you look at that last game. So, I mean, I think your point is well taken that Ellison can certainly have a positive impact on the offensive line. But, you know, even if there is more creativity, as you alluded to with the play calling, it still comes down to the execution. and the execution, you can't make up for that. And that goes back to your point about winning at the point of attack and winning in the trenches. You know, even if the play design is great, even if the existence of Red Ellison there gives them a boost, the other five guys still need to win their individual one-on-one battles.
Thanks for the call, Dave. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Take it easy. 201-939-4513. He's right. There's way too much penetration inside. Yeah. Absolutely. Guy's getting physically beat. 100%. Dave, we're with you. Christian, New York. He's up next. What's up, Christian?
Hey, guys. I've been thinking a lot about the backup quarterback position.
That's always dangerous, by the way, but anyway.
I just can't help but wonder why they haven't signed another guy yet, because, I mean, none of them really look like they can really do anything. I mean, Josh Johnson looks like he can't even read the field. I mean, he looks like he's running around clueless and running into sacks. And, I mean, I know he didn't do that too much in the second game, but...
Well, he
really
didn't have much of a chance in the second game either. Yeah, Christian, I think we need to give Josh Johnson another go at it here. The first game was rough. I'm not going to disagree with you. I know he wasn't too happy with his performance, though. Based on what he said at the presser yesterday, he seemed to indicate that maybe other guys weren't exactly doing what they're supposed to do either, and that's one of the reasons why things look so disjointed. But I agree. I think we need to get another run at Josh Johnson. I think Geno Smith has actually moved the ball pretty well. The question is, can he eliminate those boneheaded mistakes that put the ball in the other team's hands?
Yeah, I mean, Geno definitely shows the ability to move the ball. I mean, the funny thing about Geno is I can't help but be reminded about like a young Eli Manning before he was proven it all. A guy that could just on one play get a huge gain and then on another play have a head-scratching interception where you just don't even realize why he even threw that ball. And so,
you know, it's funny, by the way, Christian, if you, and you know, it's not just Geno Smith, too. Young quarterbacks do it. I'm not sure if you had a chance to watch Hard Knocks last night. Did you, Lance, have a chance to watch Hard Knocks? There was a play in the second preseason game where Jameis Winston is getting brought down, and as he's almost hitting the ground, he literally just chucks the ball up in the middle of the end zone. And listening to Dirk Cutter yell at him on the sideline after the pick, he basically screams at him multiple times, "You can't do that."
Said he was greedy.
Ever, never, ever in any situation, a play like that is not one that you can do, and you're a much better player than that. And I think while Geno's play wasn't as egregious as Winston's, and if you go back and watch that Hard Knocks episode, it was one of the dumbest throws you'll ever see. Yeah. He was literally almost on his back, and he just threw the ball in the middle of the end zone on a loop. It was a disaster. I think they ended up calling him down, and it wasn't a pick.
Correct.
Nevertheless.
But it's a learnable lesson there.
Correct. The point being that those are the things that Geno Smith has to fix. And on that goal line play, it's okay if you took a sack there. You're still in field goal range. It's better than throwing it to the other team.
Yeah, you have to cut down on the turnovers, I mean, especially when you work so hard to get there.
That's Christian, finish up. What's your last point?
Yeah, I saw that episode, too. And another thing is, you know, it's not like Josh Johnson hasn't thrown a pick himself, because everyone likes to try to protect him with saying, oh, he's so safe with the ball. And, you know, he turned it over, too. And at that point, the only thing you haven't seen from both of them is just Geno's ability. I mean, Josh Johnson just looks like he hasn't flashed any, you know, highlights, it just seems. And, you know, Geno is out there moving the ball a little bit.
Well, that's why I think Josh Johnson is going to get one more prolonged run here, whether it's the second quarterback in tomorrow, and thanks a lot for the call, Christian, we appreciate it, or if it's in that final preseason game. He'll get one more extended period to show that not only can he be trusted, that he can actually produce.
Yeah, he barely played in this last game, let's face it. I mean, there's not really much that you could take away from the Browns' performance.
Zero.
I mean, what do you have, like two pass attempts? So, I mean, I don't necessarily can point to anything from this last game. The first
and he was
game,
in there with the third team, by the way.
Correct, and you have to take that into consideration as well. Now, the first game, he was in with the first team. You know, there was certainly some ups and downs. There's no doubt about that. But I'd like to see Josh Johnson in for a more extended period of time with perhaps the first team to maybe just get a better gauge of what he could do with this offense.
Final call of the program is Andre in Rochester. He joined us on Big Blue Kickoff Live to wrap up the program. Hey, Dre.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, man?
How about Dante Dion? He's a breath of fresh air, ain't he?
And you know what, Dante Dion, if you listen to the radio broadcast tomorrow, he will be our pregame interview, and he has much like last year, shown up in practice. But unlike last year, when he got, quite frankly, lit up in a lot of game situations, he's been a lot better in those preseason games. So I think he's made a nice case for himself to try to get onto this roster as a backup defensive back, especially since he's really their only backup nickel that has a modicum of experience out there.
A huge opportunity. Valentino Blake on the exemplus, personal reasons, and Michael Hunter dealing with a concussion. Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a better opportunity for a guy than what Dante Dion has ahead of him Saturday night.
Yeah, and I also wanted to pick a bone with you, John, because you seem to think to hit on Odell.
Pick a bone.
Just a small bone.
Small, okay. We're getting more descriptive. That's very nice. Yes.
I personally think that the hit on Odell was on purpose because his first catch, he was tackled the same way.
Do you think the player was purposely trying to injure him?
Yes, I do.
I completely disagree.
I don't think there's any evidence that you can make that case.
Odell's first catch, he got tackled the same way. The same player hit him the same way.
Guys get tackled by the legs in every single football game. Landon Collins tackled the tight end the other sideline by his ankles and knees earlier in the game. Was that play dirty too?
Yeah, that was a wrap-up, though. He wasn't trying to wrap up. He was trying to hit.
He was running full speed at him. What do you want him to do, stop and try to wrap up?
And you could even make the case that Calhoun slipped on the second attempted tackle, which is the one that Beckham got hurt, if you go back and watch the replay.
Yeah, if it was just that play, it kind of could have been a little dirty, but the play before when Odell caught, he tackled him the same way.
Andre, to me, that is a common play that I see defenders make all the time, and I think people are just paying a lot more attention to it because it was number 13 on the other end of it. That's my opinion.
Awesome. All right, guys. Thanks.
No, all good, Andre, and I appreciate your perspective. I get where you're coming from. You obviously don't want to see your star player get hurt in a preseason game. I get that.
But that doesn't mean there was intent to hurt, though.
Correct. And look, Bobby Calhoun's trying to make a team. You know what I mean?
He's undrafted in 2016.
Exactly. He's not guaranteed a spot. He wants to get Odell Beckham Jr. to the ground, and he doesn't want to do it by hitting him high. So you're immediately minimizing the target area that he can go after. And, yeah, I mean, you don't want to see a guy, and you're right, Lance has the replay up right here. You don't want to see a guy drive in low with the shoulder. But I'll also point out that when Calhoun leaves his feet, Odell Beckham Jr. is in the air too.
Yeah.
And, again, you'd much prefer him tackle him around the waist. I get all that. I'm not sure if he slipped or not. I know a lot of people that have said that. I'm not sure.
It's hard to tell. I'm just going to throw that out there as a possibility because he is in the motion of going down.
I think Bobby Calhoun thought, look, Odell Beckham Jr. is jumping to catch the pass. The best way I have of getting him down is by going at him by his legs, and that's what he did. Now, again, you don't want to – you obviously would prefer not to have forcible contact, but with the way the NFL now is with these high hits, it's such a small target area for these defensive players, and I'm just going to echo what Ben McAdoo said. It's football. It's a football play. And sometimes in football, people get hurt. It's just, just the way it goes.
Well, it's the same thing, putting aside this play about, you know, a lot of people then, hindsight 2020, well, Beckham should have never been there in the second quarter.
Oh, come on.
You know, that becomes the philosophy. No, I'm just throwing it out there. But here's the thing. So what happens if this play happens in the first quarter of week one? What difference does it make?
No, it doesn't.
Injuries are always going to be at the forefront in football.
And if people want to consider that a dirty hit, then the NFL should put it in the rule book. If it's illegal, then put it in the rule book. If it's a dirty hit and you shouldn't tackle that way, then put it in the rule book. If it's not against the rules, it's a legitimate play.
He came from the side, hit him on the side of the knee, which is a legal play.
If you
look at the rule book.
If you go and do that away from a play on like a running play to the other side of the field and Beckham's not really engaged and is not part of the play.
Has nothing to do with the play.
Like if they're running the sweep to the other side of the field and he just tries to take his legs out.
Dirty. That's unnecessary.
Absolutely. He should get ejected for that.
Yeah.
But he's trying to make a play on the ball. He's trying to make a tackle. That's my thing. If you do that outside of like, you know, Beckham having the football in his hands, then dirty play, absolutely. That's uncalled for.
Yeah.
And look, I know Greg Williams, too, has a pass being their defensive coordinator.
But I think that's a coincidence. I don't think there's anything to read into that either.
I agree, too. To me, he's trying to make a tackle. And it's unfortunate that it happened. And again, you would prefer that he tackles him around the waist or around the thigh, absolutely. But when things are going that fast, sometimes guys can't be that precise, in my opinion.
I think if you ask most players, and I understand Landon Collins was extremely protective of his teammate, and you love that.
And he
I mean,
should be. It's
you
his
want
teammate.
A guy to step
Absolutely.
Up for his teammate. And he was in the heat of the battle. Emotions were high. I get that. I think, though, and I haven't heard anything from Landon Collins since, and maybe he still feels just as strongly, but I think if guys take a step back and they watch the replay, find it very difficult to believe that a guy trying to make a roster who was undrafted in 2016 and has no 100% job security was of the mindset in that moment, I'm going to do everything I can to physically harm Odell Beckham and make sure he doesn't play this season. I find that very difficult to believe.
I don't think it's realistic.
Yeah. And that's how I think most people need to look at it. It may be difficult as a fan because you don't want to see your number one guy go mm-hmm. down. And listen, hopefully he'll be back on the field week one and this won't be a lingering injury. You never want to see anybody have to deal with this before the season starts. But once again, I mean, you have to understand there's so many guys across the NFL landscape. You know, one play here or there is the difference between missing and making a roster, John.
And by the way, a second earlier or later on that hit changes everything. If he gets there before Beckham's feet hit the ground, guess what? There's no injury at all. Because all you're doing is hitting legs. If he gets there a second later and Beckham is actually on the ground longer and maybe his foot sticks in the grass when he gets hit, you could be looking at a blown out knee.
Yeah.
So the timing of this is all, you know, really, really, really critical, which is why I don't think people realize how fast the game's going when these guys are out there. These things, it's happening like that.
Fracture
so fast. And like I said, if he gets there before Beckham's feet hit the ground, there's no chance of a leg injury. Now, Beckham might land on his shoulder or something. Sure, that's possible. Or his head. But I think this
he
stuff
can
happens.
Wrap him up and bring him down.
This thing happens
yeah.
so fast.
Well,
it really does.
And here's another thing. Speaking of the speed, John, I mean, that's a risky play that he's taking himself because he right. could completely miss Odell Beckham. And
Absolutely.
By the way, that's a 50-yard touchdown for Odell Beckham.
Correct.
So, I mean, he took a risk by leaving his body because you miss Odell Beckham. If Beckham gets his feet planted, to your point, he turns around. There's nobody back there to help him out. And then he looks even further silly on film.
Or if he just messes up the angle. I mean, Beckham's going across yeah. the field. He's coming full speed. And frankly, with his head down and tackling low, is it an unsound tackle and a non-fundamental? The mental tackle? Absolutely.
Well, that was the point, yeah.
That is not how you teach it.
No.
But I do not think he was going out of his way to try to injure 13. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he was, and in that case, that's a horrible job, and it's a bad job. But I don't like to try to get into somebody's head.
No, you can't.
And judge what their intention is unless it's obvious by the circumstance that that's something that they would do. That's just me. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll have the game tomorrow night. Again, NBC4 locally, WFAN on the radio. Pregame at 6:05 on WFAN. Me, Lance, Jeff, and Paul will be with you. We'll actually be outside at MetLife Central. If you're coming to the game, you come out, say hi.
Oh, is that really?
Yeah, we're going to be out there.
I did not realize.
For
See, now I'm learning new things.
For a short one, and then we'll have a
okay.
quick post-game show, and then
Very
we'll
nice.
Be back with Big Blue Kickoff Live again. Next week, we go back to our normal time at noon right here on Giants.com. For Lance Mendel, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the dress rehearsal preseason game number 3.
Have a good one.